Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, I dim the lights. I say, babe, let's watch Roger Rabbit. And they go, what are you talking about, you psychopath? And then they leave and then I watch it alone. That's how it goes. Is that how it goes? Yes. Are we going to be okay with that? Yeah, are we going to get through it? Absolutely, dude.
Everyone's got their thing. If you like the 80s, well, you're in luck. Welcome back to the Fanatics Podcast. I am one of your hosts, David Magadoff, and with me is my most wonderful co-host, someone else who also, I think, enjoyed the 80s as well, Miss Claire Kramer. Hi, Claire.
Hi, David. You know, I saw a funny meme the other day, and it was, I lived through the 80s. It's true. I'm a little older than our guest today, but anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. I saw a funny meme, and it was like a picture of the jelly shoes that we used to wear, the little heeled jelly shoes that girls used to wear in the 80s, and it was like the original Crocs. And I was like, absolutely, that is so true.
Crocs are in.
Everything is new again.
I just saw a former podcast guest, Mr. Augustus Prue, Augie Prue, who talked about his love of trains, and he just walked the red carpet for the Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power on Amazon Prime. Look at that promo. And he had on just a nice pair of Crocs, rocking it out, rocking the Crocs.
You know what?
On the carpet.
My kids, boys and girls, they're very into Crocs, so much that I got suckered into going to the Crocs outlet. Wow. In Camarillo, because they had a buy two, get two free sale going on.
And oh, you gotta do that.
With four kids, that makes a lot of sense for me, you know?
Yeah, no,
so
you gotta
it was
do that.
Like a no-brainer. Anyway, yes, we... We're talking about the 80s today, but we're specifically talking about
the 1988 film Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yes.
And our guest today is none other than who, Claire Kramer?
Our guest is Jacob Hopkins, who is currently starring as Fushi in the anime series To Your Eternity. He's done a ton of anime, but his breakout role was Alexander Drew in True Blood, and he was also in The Goldbergs. So, yes, he's coming on to talk today about his fanaticism of Who Loves Roger Rabbit.
It's something that I adore. We adored.
I did not know that about you, David.
When he mentioned that, I lit up because I was like, I would love to talk about this. And we did, and I hope it shows because I was very excited because I didn't realize how much I loved that movie until he mentioned how much he loved it, and then it just became
You did a Claire today. You kind of you did a mirror of the guest, which is usually me. I love the movie too. I'll have to rewatch it, obviously.
And Jacob, what a delightful dude this guy was.
I knew I was going to like him when he turned on his camera and he was sitting in one of those deluxe gamer chairs. That's when I was like, this is going to be a fun episode. Like, you know, there's just something cool about that.
Yeah.
Chair.
To sit into that chair is to sit into greatness. And I think
it's almost like sitting on the throne in Game of Thrones.
Kind of.
But, you know, it's just a little like comment on who you are without having to say anything.
That's true. That's really true. And mm-hmm. He's an absolute joy and an absolute delight.
Yeah, we did a deep dive into Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Jacob, what do you think makes dip?
All right. It's got to be evil, no love.
Just the concept of evil.
And Christopher Lloyd.
That's scary enough to destroy a cartoon.
I mean, fair enough. When I was a kid, dude, I'd see they dip a live shoe in there. And that shoe's like maybe like 2 minutes old. It like just got on. It just got on camera. It was horrifying. We're talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, by the way, not our nightmares and schizophrenic dreams.
Yeah, you know what, Jacob? Thank you for that, because I'm sitting here like I know the topic and I'm already confused. So for the listeners who aren't so dialed in with the lingo of Roger Rabbit, give us an overview of what we're going to be talking about on Fanatics today. What is Roger Rabbit? Who is Roger Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit was originally a book, and then it became a movie. And it's about a world where cartoons are real, but they're not like, you know, going about their everyday lives. Like it's like the cartoons that we watch are actually filmed on camera because the toons are real. It's their job. They're actors. And Roger Rabbit is framed for murder. Roger Rabbit is a very famous, popular tune. And Eddie Valiant is a guy played by Bob Hoskins who sort of takes his case. He takes like all these tune cases and like he tries to prove his innocence. And it's an amazing movie. If you disagree, please stop breathing my air. But yeah, that's Roger Rabbit. And we'll get into that. We'll talk a little bit.
1989, Robert Zemeckis film, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, one of my favorites growing up as well, this topic, is so great, Jacob. I did not know that it was a, but the thing is, you really love it. I'm already sensing it. Like you're saying things quickly in a way that I'm like, this is sexy. And I think I like it. And I'm realizing you love it. So this is going to be a very fun conversation.
I do love it. I
didn't know it was a book.
It was a book. That's right. It came out. I don't.
Was it
a
full novel?
Exactly,
was it a short story?
It was a short story. It was a short story, and it's a lengthy read. It's not like a very, very short story, but yeah, it was a book, and the book was much darker and more violent than the actual movie, and they kind of had to like tone it down because they wanted to like sort of incorporate it with the Disney World, which they did in Disneyland, I believe. They don't have this in World, but in Land, they have Toontown.
Toontown.
Yeah, that's where that's the thing in the movies. Yes, that's right. They're remodeling.
I went on the Who Framed Roger Rabbit ride earlier this year in Disneyland because my adult friend in his 30s said, this is really the one good ride in Toontown. And I said, let's just go. I haven't been in a long time. And I rode that ride. It is not a great ride, Jacob. It's a great
no,
movie,
you don't
it's
like
not a
it.
Great ride.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Sorry. No.
It's
good
it.
For small people, but I am not a small person.
I just love when Roger Rabbit like holds out the hole and he goes, "I'll save you," and like he does the illusion, man. You don't like that? You don't like the mirrors, the playing tricks on your mind?
I would like it if it really worked if I was as someone who's above the age of 9. But
all
Jacob,
right, that's fair.
There is no judgment here, except maybe there is. Claire has a question.
I'm so confused by this, but I love it. Okay, so Jacob, you're young. You're young. You're, you know, 20, 21, somewhere
I'm
around
like
there.
Eight. Yeah, yeah.
You're like 8, not 8. Yeah. You were fooled by the illusion, though, so David's considering you younger than himself.
He's youthful.
He's youthful. How did you first get introduced to Roger Rabbit? Because as David mentioned, the movie came out in the 80s, late 80s. Mm-hmm. So this is pre-Jacob Hopkins. How did you get introduced to this concept, the character, the book, and the movie?
Well, I first went on the ride when I was a little kid. Little kid. And I didn't know what Roger Rabbit was, but I loved the ride. And I never really paid much attention to it. It was just like, you know, a ride at Disneyland, and I didn't like become hooked on it or fan of it or whatever. But I discovered like years later, I think I was around maybe like 11 or 12 or something like that, where I found that my parents had a VHS of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And I popped that in and I would watch that like once a month, and that would become like a cult of mine. You know, cult classic of mine. And yeah, I loved it ever since. And it's always, and I recently got back into it. Before we were doing this podcast, like a couple months ago, I discovered that Disney Plus had put up 3 Roger Rabbit shorts. So they actually tried to make it a TV show. They were like 9 or 10 minute long shorts. Maybe a couple of them were a little bit shorter than that. But they tried. They tried to make it a TV show, and they tried to push it like that. And I don't know what happened.
I thought those shorts just, I remember those shorts growing up, and they would just be at the beginning of a lot of Disney movies.
Yeah, they would do that.
To make it into a TV show?
Yeah, I think they did. I think I remember reading that what they were trying to do is market it to be a longer lasting project of some sorts, whether it was going to be a sequel, which I know they did write a sequel. They had a script for it, but it never happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then they did those shorts, but they just wanted to make some sort of brand out of it, and they weren't really sure what direction they were going in, and that's where it kind of just stood at a standstill.
That's where they went to the Space Jam franchise after that. they're like, we're gonna just do the basketball thing, it's easier instead of this rabbit and Jessica. So if you were to, this, I'm kind of jumping all over. If you were to imagine, you know, they just did a new Space Jam in 2021. If you were to imagine today's Roger Rabbit, what would that story be from someone like you who's passionate about the character?
Today's Roger Rabbit, I feel like, would be so drastically different than what they wanted to do for the sequel.
Wouldn't it be very adult? It'd be very adult, wouldn't it?
It would be very adult. But also, I don't think it would be even remotely close to what they wanted to do, because, see, this was at like the height of like Indiana Jones and stuff, right? And what they wanted to do, with the sequel with Roger Rabbit was it was going to be his backstory. And you find, and it's like, it's he's trying to figure out like who his father was. But somewhere along
it's
the
like
story,
the Hannibal to Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, exactly. He gets drafted into World War II.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's what the movie is. So I'm like, I don't know. Like, if they could do it, but I feel like it'd be a little weird to do that now. And then at the end of the movie, they find out Bugs Bunny is his dad. So I'm not joking, by the way. I've read the script.
Really?
I've read the script. I've read the script. I've read it like 3 times.
They found out that Bugs Bunny's the dad?
Bugs Bunny's his dad, and he also gets drafted into World War II. And he has to save Jessica Rabbit from the clutches of Germany. Yeah.
Obviously.
All right, Jacob. So I'm Googling this. So a slight fact checking, because I'm all, but slight in curiosity,
slight, okay.
But also some fact checking.
Okay.
So
okay,
who
okay.
censored Roger Rabbit was the 1981 novel written by Gary K. Wolfe, and it was a noir mystery novel, and it was a proper novel, not a short story. This is 226 pages.
It wasn't a short story. Okay. All right. So it was a novel.
But it looks really noir-esque, and I really cannot wait to buy it, because this genuinely looks like the kind of the way that I remember reading Wicked. I don't know. Did you ever read Wicked, the book? Anybody here?
Not the
book. Or just see the musical?
The musical,
yeah,
yes.
So I remember reading the book. I remember being in a Barnes & Noble, and I saw the book Wicked, and I was just like, oh, I like the idea of an adult version of like The Wizard of Oz, and we're like there's sex and stuff and dark comedy and all these things. So I cannot wait to see a much more now noir-esque version of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So thank you very much.
There's going to be like Roger's like blowing people's heads off and stuff. Yeah, it's pretty dark.
I mean, it seems like part of the appeal to you of the franchise is it's a little bit all over the place. Like the Toontown in Disneyland, the movie, the book, the shorts.
Yeah.
What's it's your just, favorite piece of the property?
It's just... I would say the movie, but I just really like it because it's fantastical. And I feel like it appeals to anyone who's grown up on all these classic cartoons, Looney Tunes, Disney, you know, Bugs Bunny, Mickey Mouse, Daffy, Donald. It's a world where they all exist with us. And to think that there would be a place where you could go to interact with them and be a part of their lives is really cool. I know I'm like 20, but... I like
you. Just like Jessica Rabbit. Let's be real. She's always has been and always will be forever a very weird cartoon sex symbol.
Dude, she's just drawn that way. Relax.
She was just drawn that way. How many times have you seen this movie, Jacob? How many times do you think? And how often? And will you go back to it at like certain parts and times of your life or like a year? Like, is it during Thanksgiving you watch it every year or something?
I feel like I feel like I put the movie on just to get to the part where, like, the weasels show up at the bar and Roger has to drink the whiskey to just, like, blow the place to sky high. I don't know why, but that's like an upset. I can't explain this stuff. I sound insane, but
no,
these are the things that I am obsessed with.
It's a good scene. It's a great scene.
It's a great scene.
And it's a slow burner because, right, because it's the idea of Roger Rabbit's, it's the first time he's ever had a drink.
Yes, right.
And so also, the idea is we're all excited to see, like, what the heck happens when this crazy rabbit gets a drink and he just goes all over the place. And it really is like
when
a
you
really
asked
funny.
Me what dip was made of earlier, there are theories, David, that there's alcohol in them, and that's why the toons don't like alcohol. So there you go.
Wait, this is like an urban legend?
No, legend.
He's talking about some chat room or something. So, where do these theories come from, Jacob?
That's what an urban legend
YouTube,
is, David.
YouTube, Wikipedia. No, listen. There's this theory where, like, the reason why Roger can't stand alcohol is just because it doesn't mesh well with toons. And people were saying, like, oh, well, back when cell shading was a thing, you know, rubbing alcohol was used to sort of like scratch out mistakes in animation. And that's why they don't like actual like gin, whiskey, beer alcohol, but also that's what's in dip. So I don't know. It's pretty sound to me, but that's
that
a little
sound.
Tidbit. Yeah.
Wait, like what that. Is dip? So explain this to me.
Okay, so
explain,
dip.
Yes, explain to Claire what right. the heck we're talking about.
So Claire, dip, right, is this concoction that Doc Brown makes. And he's the bad guy in this movie, by the way. And he, it's this liquid that kills toons. You can't kill a toon. They're immortal. But this can kill them. And so that's his way of sort of driving out all the toons in Toontown, because what he wants to do is build a freeway through it.
He wants. This is literally the invention
like
of the 110 freeway.
Also,
Claire.
That's Dr. Seuss's like.
Yeah, one else has heard of a freeway. He's like, I'm going to build a freeway, and Bob Hoskins like,
he has to drive it through Toontown. It's
basically he has to drive
the
it
origin
through Toontown.
Of the Los Angeles 110 freeway. Claire.
So he
that
creates
is a lot of proof frame.
So he creates a dip that kills toons.
Right.
And this
what
is part of the storyline. Got
this.
It. I mean, I got it. Who are you in this cast of characters, Jacob? Who are you? Are you Roger Rabbit? Are you, Christopher Lloyd? Are you Thumper? Who are you?
I'm like,
I think Thumper's in it.
He actually is. I think I'm the octopus bartender in that one scene where it's like, they're doing like the crane shot of where Jessica performs. And it's just an octopus just like flipping glasses around. And he looks like he's going to pass out.
I like that. A multitasker.
Just no thoughts at all in that head. Just, he's just a guy.
Jacob, he is just an octopus. Leave the guy alone. Just an octopus.
He's just a guy. I'm not ripping on him. He's just there. He's just
a man with eight legs and a job.
Out. Yeah. I'm either that guy or like one of the penguins that's just like kind of flip-flapping around with like they're holding like the plates with the drinks above their heads because they're tiny. Yeah.
It's the Mary Poppins
penguins. It's the Mary Poppins penguins. That's right.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Jacob, do you ever need to show this to people in your life that you are romantically tied to garner their engagement of whether they are someone you should be dating or not?
Yes. I dim the lights. I say, babe, let's watch Roger Rabbit. And they go, what are you talking about, you psychopath? And then they leave and then I watch it alone. That's how it goes. Is that how it goes? Yes. Are we going to be okay with that? Yeah. Are we going to get through it? Absolutely, dude.
We as in you and yourself and your and I'm
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Well, is now it, I is it a lonely life to dedicate yourself? Yes, it is. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Good.
I could see you two having a watch party. Like, this is this is what I think is going to happen next time that VHS tape goes
just
in.
Just put it on. How do you stream on this thing?
There's a beautiful brown couch right behind Jacob as we're recording. And I see me and him next to each other on that brown couch.
Yes.
Each with a can of Mountain Dew. And we are clicking
Dunkaroos, Sunny D, and Celery Sticks. And we're
going
to have a
great
time. Well,
David, who are you in the film? You obviously also are, you know, well-versed in Roger Rabbit. Which character are you?
I think I am Roger probably because I think he's, you know, he's feeling sensitive and framed and guilty. And I feel like that's a lot of just where I am in life all the time.
But the difference is that you actually did those things and it's time you stop dodging them.
Jacob, I thought what happens on DMs stay on DMs. But Bob Hoskins, how good is he in it? Like Bob Hoskins, who I feel like that was the height. He's great as an actor, period. And anything you ever see Bob Hoskins do. But is it a travesty or is it a treasure that he's probably going to be most remembered for playing Detective Valiant in?
I think you're right. I think it is his most notable movie.
Yes.
But I think it's a treasure because it was such a groundbreaking. First of all, it's just a great movie overall. It's got a really good story. Bob Hoskins' character, Eddie Valiant, is a really good character. His backstory pretty much is that his brother was killed by a toon. And that's why that's why he became an alcoholic, dropped all these toon cases. And the way they play that and the beautiful, like, the soundtrack that supports it, all the music, it's just every moment where it like spends time on his backstory is so heart-wrenching and tragic and beautiful, and he plays that really, really well. Even when he's like in the movie theater and he's telling Roger about like what happened, why he dropped all those toon cases, it's incredible. And it's just a legendary movie. Broke so many grounds. It was the first movie that really did what it did. No movie had ever... I mean, Mary Poppins tried to do it, but they kind of failed. Like, they didn't really create the illusion of animation and live action blending well together.
No, it was all... In Mary Poppins, it was all, like, the mystique of you could, you know, was it in their mind, was a part of the story. And this was actually a reality, an alternate reality.
Right, and they nailed it. Like, if you watch Mary Poppins and it shows, like, they're talking to all the cartoons, they're not even, like, meeting their eyes and stuff. Like, they didn't really know what they were doing. But Roger Rabbit nailed it. The cell shading, the practical effects, it works so well.
Jacob, are you bagging on a 1964 film that was just trying... That was
Listen, I like to talk about how the 1984 thing was better than the 1950s thing. I really
1988.
I'm sorry.
We're almost in the 90s.
And that movie bombed.
This is almost 30 years later. Technology got slightly better, and Robert Zemeckis was born, who became Mr. Technology Film Experience Man.
That's right.
director extraordinaire. And have you ever seen Cool World? That's the Brad Pitt one, right?
Cool World.
Anybody with me on this? Hold on.
Wait, hold on. I'm Googling it.
This was 1992. World. So this was like 4 years later.
Oh, cool world.
And it was like kind of dirty.
And I remember this.
Adult Who Framed Roger Rabbit, because it was Brad Pitt was the only like live action guy in this very animated world. He wasn't the only one.
But
they're
all like smoking hot. And I do remember this.
Yeah, he has like this relationship with this very busty Kim Basinger style cartoon. And that's where I think people felt a little uncomfortable, because that was a bomb. Speaking of animated live action combos.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because why do you think this combination worked at the time with Roger Rabbit, with these other characters, and with the, you know, mixing the animation and live action? What made it like resonate with people, and what has made it a classic?
I think it just, in my opinion, it all roots in just the likability of Roger Rabbit in general. He's a very likable, you know, he's a lovable goof, but
yeah, they made it
work because, you know, his character, the writing, but also I've watched a ton of like behind the scenes stuff of how they did it. And they really did a good job with blocking and props, the way they would sort of wire real life objects around and then animate around that, so the characters are like moving around those objects and stuff. They really paid attention to detail, like very, very meticulously. And even in scenes with, like, for example, like if there's like a fan, you know, going and it's making the light shade in and shade out, they animate the characters where their lighting matches with their surroundings. They really make them fit into the environment. And I feel like that's what a lot of, and that really succeeded in like creating the visual, like, oh my God, they're actually there. And that's where a lot of the other movies went wrong, where they didn't really pay that much attention, or maybe they didn't have the budget. I don't know, but point still stands. They paid so much attention to detail and really wanted to make sure people actually believe that these cartoons exist, you know. Plus Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny were in it, but
right. It's like the ultimate mashup. I mean, they do cameos, you know, Roger Rabbit and Jessica Rabbit do cameos in other movies. Like, mm-hmm. It's not just this property. This is the main one for them, obviously. But okay, yeah. So the question always comes down to this. Is this a children's movie or is it an adult movie? Because
I would definitely not.
It's hard to
let
tell.
My child watch it. I don't know. I'd say like, you know, 13 and up. It's got some more mature themes, but it's got a lot of heart, and it's not like rooted in these adult themes. They're there, but what it really centers around is just the good nature of Roger Rabbit himself. And I feel like that appeals to pretty much anyone.
What's impressive is they created a world that is not Looney Tunes and that is not Disney. Like, they created but still, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy and all these other characters appear, which is a really fun thing, but they didn't rely on them. They created like their own toon world. And that's always a really difficult thing at the very top of a film, to be like, trust us, we're going to take you down a animated road, adults. But it's exactly right. It works in that way that every streamer and every network is always chomping at the bit to create a show or a film that can have a son, a daughter, a father, and a grandma and a grandpa all sit down, pay money, and watch it together. Mm-hmm. And Who Framed maybe isn't for the 4 and 5 year olds, but in the way that many Pixar movies are, they were able to get a lot of people to sit down for that film together as a family and all appreciate it and all like it. And
well, because it focuses on those family values. And I feel like that's what a lot of animated stuff and TV shows and movies, I feel like a lot of newer stuff that's been coming out, I feel like they miss that, because that's the ultimate thing that anyone can relate to, you know, Eddie Valiant and his family, and the tragedy behind that. You know, we've all lost someone. And I feel like we can all sort of sit down and empathize with that and realize this is real. You know, I'm not watching something fake. Like, it's not a cheap, you know, cash grab. It really hits home. It really, like, really tugs at your heartstrings. And it's so beautiful, man. It's just great. They really,
RK Maroon, Maroon Cartoons. That's
right.
Maroon Cartoons.
Do you feel like if they made a sequel, you know, and guess what? Not too much time has passed, because look at what's happening in entertainment now. The sequels are 20, 30 years later sometimes. So would they have to retain the same physical appearance and quality of tune, like simplicity of the animation, or would you want the upgrade to the 2020s, you know, 2023 version?
No,
right?
I would not want
part
that.
Part of the charm is the is the fact that the toons have a very distinct look to them, right?
Yes, exactly. I feel like,
I mean, and at least Roger, like, Rabbit's wearing pants, which is good.
That's true. He's not Bugs Bunny, but
right.
I really love the movie for its, like, classic cell shading, you know, the classic animation style. It's really heartwarming and just really nice to look at. I feel like it's way better. I know it takes more work, but it's way better than the animation now, where it's just kind of like puppeting. And, like, the Chip and Dale movie that came out, they tried to do that Roger Rabbit thing where
I kind of liked it.
The animation,
Claire,
I feel like it worked sort of, but they failed to really make them fit into the environment. Like, that kind of, like, meticulous detail that I was talking about of Roger Rabbit, they sort of, like, stuck out to me.
This,
like,
is the
I
one
wish...
with the, on the cruise ship, right?
It's like the newer, it's the newest Chip and Dale.
Yeah, brand new one with John Mulaney and Andy Samberg. Jacob, are you and I going to be sitting at opposite ends of this brown couch now?
I just wish they went to the classic, you know, like, animation style.
All right, I'm going to throw some things at you guys. This is some fun talking points.
Right,
Harrison Ford was Spielberg's original choice to play Eddie Valiant, but his price was too high. Chevy Chase was the second choice, but he wasn't interested. Bill Murray was also considered for the role, but apparently due to his idiosyncratic and interesting methods of receiving offers for roles, aka, I believe Claire and I both know this, he does not have an agent. He just sort of takes the roles himself. He does. He phone call right to him. He missed out on it. Eddie Murphy reportedly turned down the roles. He misunderstood the concept of cartoon characters and humans being coexisting. And then apparently Robin Williams, Robert Redford, Jack Nicholson, Sylvester Stallone, Ed Harris, Charles Grodin, and Don Lane were also considered for the role, but ultimately went to Bob Hoskins because Spielberg thought his acting, and I guess I'm just going to assume he was the only one who said yes. Did I just mention everybody, every male actor from 1988 and just
what
you shared?
Jack Nicholson as Eddie Valiant. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they're all too much of the cool guy. I feel like Bob Hoskins had that warmth that they didn't have, except for Robin Williams. I feel like Robin Williams, that's interesting. He definitely has the heart, but Bob Hoskins has the heart and the grit. Mm-hmm. And
he does have grit. Robin Williams is almost too much of a cartoon character to be the guy who's... Because the whole point is it's a guy who's... Eddie Valiant's this, like... He's, like, anti-cartoon. Like, because a cartoon killed his brother. So he needs to be a little gritty. Harrison Ford would have been good. Actually, I'm down. I think Harrison Ford was a good choice. It's a shame
Harrison
he said no.
Ford would have been interesting. He definitely has the heart and the grit. Definitely a different... It would feel a lot different, though, because he's got a different stature. He's got a different presence. But I still think it would have been interesting. I did not know that. That's cool. That reminds me of, like, in Star Wars, they were, like, trying to figure out who they should get for Han Solo before they cast Harrison Ford. And they were originally thinking of Kirk Douglas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that would have been interesting. And then they were thinking of Christopher Walken, which would probably not have been so good. But then they went with Harrison Ford.
Can I throw some other people who apparently were also being thought of for the Christopher Lloyd role as Judge Doom? You ready for this?
Oh, okay. Yeah, here we go.
Tim Curry originally auditioned for the role.
Oh, that would have been good. That would have been
But
really
was
good.
Rejected because the producers found him too terrifying.
Oh.
He was too scary.
Really? Interesting.
That feels a little weird.
That does feel a little weird because he's like cartoonish villain, but it still works. But he was too terrifying, is what they were saying?
He was too terrifying, said the producers. Wow. Christopher Lee, who we know from the Star Wars, correct?
And yeah.
Was also considered Dracula, for it, but he turned it down. John Cleese expressed interest for the role, but he wasn't scary enough.
Hmm.
Mm. I feel like Christopher Lee would have been good.
And then Peter O'Toole, F. Murray Abraham, Roddy McDowall, and Sting were considered for the role.
Oh. Sting. Well.
And then Christopher Lloyd won it because of essentially Back to the Future with Zemeckis.
Yeah, Robert Zemeckis. Right,
I think he did a good job.
He did a great job. Tim Curry,
he scared me. I'm with you, right, Jacob? Like I had.
Oh no, he was.
I had
terrifying
dreams as a kid of just like, ooh.
Yeah, no, he was scary. He did a really good job. But I'm like thinking of Tim Curry. That would have been good. I feel like he would have done a really good job. Would have been different, but I would have liked to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Curry's, he should be in more things. That's just a Tim Curry note, I think, for all of us.
Yeah.
Jacob, this was an absolute delight of a time we just had with you talking about
this.
Oh, no,
it's over?
I know. It's crazy.
What?
This is wild. I know. They're short podcasts. Okay, but
we
need to
talk about other things.
But you're going to come back on. Don't worry, we're going to have you back on because there's a lot. There's a lot in your tool belt of fanaticisms. So we're just chipping. This is like the tip of the iceberg here. Don't worry.
Sweet. But before we completely finish, I do have to ask this though.
Okay.
As always, if you had to psychoanalyze yourself and put on a little therapist, okay? Why do you think, now you keep, when we say in the royal you feel this way and you, I want to say I. So Jacob, you are very thoughtful and I feel like I'm going to get a very thoughtful answer. So I'm already excited for the answer.
All right.
Why do you think you love this so much? Do you think it is speaking to something, not like as a your 12-year-old self or something about your parents growing up? Like you really like this movie.
It's a lot of different parts to it. I feel like there's definitely the nostalgia factor. There's definitely, I have a brother, so Eddie Valiant losing his brother, I couldn't imagine ever going through that. So that really hits home. But I think the biggest reason is because I grew up on all these cartoons. They were basically my childhood, and I loved them so much that I decided to do it as a career. And it's sort of like a love letter. They mash up. And it's not like, they just kind of throw it in whatever. They don't put really much thought into it. They build this whole world and it's dedicated to all of these fantastic cartoons that we all grew up with, our parents, our grandparents. And I feel like that's where the love lies. And that's why it's going to be timeless and still going to be a popular movie years from now.
Dude, I think you nailed it. And I'm actually, you did not disappoint. I'm not just saying it. I think it is a love letter to cartoons. And I think for someone who like you, who adores cartoons, that makes sense why it would mean so much to you. It is a love letter to cartoons. And are you ready for this transition, my friends?
That's why I said it.
Love letter.
Like,
You're good. If I'm ever out sick, Claire, take Jacob. He can be our co-host. I give full permission.
Yes.
Jacob Hopkins would happily be a fantastic
100%. I love him. Yes. Go ahead, David.
No, please. Regale us with a love letter to this wonderful film, Jacob.
Dear Roger Rabbit, thank you for always being there for me and teaching me the value of growing up with my brother and my family. And thank you for reminding me why I love all these cartoons so much that built the foundation of my childhood. Love, Jacob.
Beautiful.
Lovely.
No dip for you. The dip will be off to the side.
I was like hovering over it, but then I was pulled back up. So.
I do appreciate it was Judge Doom, by the way. Like, it wasn't even just like Judge Henry. It was like Eddie Valiant, but Judge Doom. His last name had to be Doom.
I like how they were all like, should we question his name?
No, though?
Should we think about that?
Tim Curry was too scary for a guy named Judge Doom. Let's all remember that we learned that today.
He was too terrifying.
Terrifying.
He was too terrifying. That's what it was.
I love that little tidbit.
That was great, Jacob.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, so the interesting thing, you know, he was talking about why, when you ask, like, into your psyche, why do you love Roger Rabbit? You know, he was talking about his love for morning cartoons. Well, actually, Gary Wolfe, who wrote the novel Who Censored Roger Rabbit, which we touched on, he said his inspiration was watching the commercials for, like, the Frosted Flakes, which had Tony the Tiger, and Trix, which had the Trix Rabbit. And the anime characters would be interacting with the kids in the commercial without comment. Like, it was just very basic, like, interactions. And that was actually the inspiration for Gary behind creating the Toons and Roger Rabbit and the two worlds that didn't comment on the fact that they were, like, different, you know, different, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for, presentations, different societies, like, living as one.
Dimensions.
Yeah, dimensions. So I thought that was really interesting.
That is really interesting, because you could say to yourself, the amazing thing about Who Framed Roger Rabbit is it was one of the very first, if not the first. I mean, we talked about Mary Poppins too, but I'm sure in other movies we've seen it as well that we can't think off the top of our head right now. But it was the first, like, hey, we're gonna have humans and animated characters interact in a very visceral, real, same dimension world for the entirety of the film. And it's true. That's not really the real reason why it was so special. I think it made it, I think it elevated it. I think it was really interesting. But ultimately, it was just the story. It was a great story. And it was a love letter to cartoons, which I loved how he put that. Jacob was astute in that. Yeah. What a great idea, Mr. Gary.
He watched
commercials and immediately that was his premise. I love finding out how, like, some small thing could just, you know, create one of the greatest movies or one of the greatest novels. You know, I love finding out where inspiration comes from.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense if you think about those cereal commercials, which really haven't changed, by the way, in talking about, like, how things have changed. Well, Tony the Tiger, he has not really evolved. You know, the Trix Rabbit is still the Trix Rabbit. Like, you know, Count Chocula.
Yeah.
Like, all the Halloween cereals, you know, that come out every year.
Kids hang out with cartoons. It's easy. But I think what was fun about Who Framed was that it's adults hanging out with them. And mm-hmm. I think that was, like, how do adults interact? And kind of, you know, that's part of Eddie's journey is, like, you know, cartoons are supposed to make you laugh and have a good time, Roger Rabbit says. So there's a loss of innocence and a regaining of innocence. It really is. It's a very well done film, beyond it being just this animated, you know, technological marvel for a time. It really is a good story, and a good story will always win out, which I love. I think I saw Tom Hanks say that the other day on a podcast. He was just, at the end of the day, you know, you can't hide you can't hide a good movie or a bad movie for too long. Like, you can maybe get a big box office for a couple of days on a movie, but after a few days, people will start talking. And if it's a bad movie and a bad story, ain't nobody gonna come to watch it. So you can have as many actors and as much Marvel and animation and I say Marvel not as in Marvel the Studios. Marvel is in the word marvelous things happening. You can right. have as much of that as you want. But at the end of the day, what's the story? What is the story?
What are the relationships? What is what is happening in the, you know, protagonist and antagonist life?
Yeah. And I think you and I've got a pretty good story, Claire, on the Fanatics podcast. And
so hopefully
people keep coming back for the story of us.
The story of us. That is true.
And you guys are a part of that story as well. So thank you for listening, enjoying, liking, subscribing, all the verbs of the Fanatics podcast on Apple and Spotify and iHeart. And if you listen to it at wearefanatics.com, that's awesome. I appreciate you, person who goes to our website and just clicks play because it's there.
Do it.
And it's easy.
Peer pressure. Do it.
And we made it. We made this website. So hopefully you're enjoying it. This was a fun one, Claire. This was a real fun one. Should we say goodbye and look forward to next week with everyone?
Yes, absolutely. We will see you guys next Thursday. Enjoy your week. And remember, what I always like to say is sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. Bye.
Bye.
All right, before we let you guys go, let me tell you about next week's episode. Like I do every episode, we have on Miss Sahara Barrow. You know her from just being an amazing human all over the social medias. I'm talking TikTok and Insta and YouTube. Why? Because she's a beauty content creator and founder of Zahara the Label. She is a full-time mom, full-time entrepreneur. She's a rock star, okay? Full on. And she's coming on to talk about her love of fashion. Finally. How have we gone through this many episodes and not talked about fashion yet? Well, here we are, and it's a good one. Enjoy.
Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at wearefanatics.
Yes, that's We Are F-A-N-A-D-D-I-C-T-S. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Kelsey Goldberg. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.
Chip is made of evil. And Christopher Lloyd, too. Tim Curry was too scary. Yeah, I guess that's true. But it's okay to be scary if your name is Judge Doom. Sure, Tim Curry's scary, but Christopher Lloyd is scary too.
That was really good, David.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.